to ask Cuban nationalists, they might call this communist music. The band here is Irakere, or should I say, the original lineup of Irakere, one of Havana's greatest bands ever. Because over the decades, there have been some notable changes in the group, perhaps none more significant than the defection of its Cuban co-founders, Paquito de Rivera and trumpeter Arturo Sandoval. For the rest of today's show, we're going to focus on the man on that trumpet, Arturo Sandoval. These are interesting times for Cubans, with relations between the U.S. and Cuba softening up a lot, but especially for Cubans who've defected. As you'll hear in a few minutes, Sandoval has his own dramatic defection story. Sandoval's skeptical about the opening with Cuba, but optimistic. He even called Barack Obama before the president went to Cuba in March. Sandoval says he warned the president that Cubans are still being imprisoned and that the Castros are not to be trusted. Sandoval has reason to be wary. After all, when he lived under the Castro regime, he was jailed for 3 months just for listening to jazz on Voice of America. Sandoval was in his early 20s at the time. Shortly after that, he fell in love with a woman, Marianela, who happened to work for the communist government. And yeah, even though he was in love, politics did affect the relationship.
In the very beginning, that was kind of difficult because we really fell in love, and we still, after 41 years of marriage. And
congratulations.
Thank you so much. I love that woman with my heart. But I'm going to tell you, in the beginning, she was... I never took it personal with her because I knew she wasn't alone. She belongs to a million of people that were confused about the whole thing because they paint their story like something beautiful they're gonna do for the people, and so many promise that it became a bunch of lies. And later on, to be honest, when she really finally opened her eyes and discovered the reality and the truth about, she became harder than me against the government. And I have to hold her a few times and say, honey, please, 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 we're going to end in jail, you and me. Please take it easy and then let's figure it out how we can get out of here.
Back when you first met her, no one came to your wedding, I gather, because they knew about your politics. Now, so they didn't show up at the wedding because they figured the government might be watching and they didn't want to be associated with you, or because they sincerely hated your politics?
No, she worked for the government like everybody else, but she worked in very important office of foreign office minister or whatever, and everybody there was a member of the Communist Party and everything, and they don't want to be associated with a guy who really loved jazz and loved the U.S. and was a musician, because a musician, for their mentality, they don't consider us like a first-class people. Mm. You're a musician, you are not something respectable.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's another stupid concept, you know. I have to deal with that for years.
Yeah, you know the old joke where the kid says to his parents, when I grow up, I want to be a musician. And the father says, well, you're going to have to choose one or the other.
Oh, you grew up, or you're a musician. You cannot
achieve
both. You
gotta grow
up
and be a musician. You can't do both.
You cannot achieve both at the same time.
We had a few laughs during our interview, especially as he told me about meeting his musical hero, Dizzy Gillespie.
Early morning, somebody called me, a friend of mine who worked in the musician union. And he said, Arturo, I know you're a big fan of Dizzy Gillespie. He's coming this afternoon to Havana. And I said, well, that's a good joke. And he said, no, I'm very serious, man. But don't say anything that I told you this, because that could be a serious problem.
That's Sandoval taking off on a solo on the classic A Night in Tunisia, the late great Dizzy Gillespie on the other trumpet. And that's where we're going to pick up the Arturo Sandoval story, to the time he met Diz, his hero. This was 1977. Dizzy was the headliner on a jazz cruise in the Caribbean, and there was a brief stopover in Havana. Sandoval got word and headed to the harbor to meet him.
At that time, I have a very old car. It was a Plymouth 1951. It was falling apart. And I just painted with gasoline and tar. That smelled horrible and looks
nice
worse.
Nice color.
Yes, and it smelled worse and looks worse, you know. And the passenger door doesn't open. It was locked. And then, okay, but this is, I have only one question. He looked at him and me and he said, ask this guy, he got a car. And I said, yes, I have a little car. He said, okay, show me the city. I never been here before. I can't wait.
So Sandoval drove Dizzy around Havana playing the chauffeur. Dizzy had no idea Sandoval even played trumpet. But later that evening at a jam session, Dizzy found out.
I was backstage there warming up a little bit when Dizzy arrived. And then he looked at me and opened his eyes and dropped his chin, you know, opened his mouth like this and said, sorry, my French, but he said, what the hell my driver is doing with the trumpet? And somebody said, no, he's a trumpet player. This is a hell no, he's my driver. And, you know, I knew, of course, a bunch of his licks and phrases and things and his tunes or whatever. And he was laughing and laughing and laughing because later on he confessed, he said, man, I weren't expecting to hear a good piano player, a good saxophone player, a good trumpet player over here. I was expecting, of course, to hear some good percussionists and things like that and good dancers and singers or whatever. But to be honest, I weren't prepared to hear a good trumpet player over here. And then he come back to New York and started to talk to everybody. This really put us in the map, to be honest. We never going to say enough or be grateful enough for what he did for all of us.
But Dizzy also helped out Arturo Sandoval in one other major way. In 1990, Sandoval and his family were fed up with Cuba. They wanted out. At the time, Sandoval was on tour with the Dizzy Gillespie Orchestra in Europe. Sandoval's wife and son were laying low in London. Somehow, Cuban authorities suspected something was brewing, and they figured they'd track down Sandoval's wife and son first. Late one night, Sandoval had a brief, tearful conversation with his wife and realized he was going to have to act fast. He and Dizzy were at their hotel on a tour date in Greece, and he called Dizzy's room.
I woke him up. That was one something in the morning. I said, Dizzy, I'm sorry to wake you up, but I need to talk to you. Then I went to his room. I explained him the whole situation. And then he was, you know, almost sleepy, almost awake. And I said, great, get my wallet there. I got a business card there that I'm going to use it now. And then a few months before, this was in the Air Force One.
Presidential plane.
Yes, sir. Mm. And then a group of people, important people, included the vice president. At that time, it was Don Quayle.
Dan Quayle,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, all those people gave Dizzy the business card. I said, Mr. Gillespie.
Incredible, even the vice president. Here, I'm the vice president. Here's my card.
Yes, sir. And I say, Dizzy, if you ever need us for anything, don't hesitate. This is our car. And then everybody, I said, and Dizzy told me, oh, give me my wallet. I got a bunch of cards there. I'm going to use one of those. And then it's very true. He called the White House. And then I think it was a general or colonel, something I can't remember exactly. He talked to me and asked me a bunch of questions. I said, what is the problem? And explained everything. And I said, my preoccupation, my biggest worry is my wife and son there in London. And he said, give me your address. I'm going to send a car right away there and pick them up and bring them into the embassy in London. They're going to be safe there. Mm. And later on, he said, okay, the American ambassador in Rome going to call you in a few minutes. And they wake him up in the middle of the night, and then a gentleman called me and said, okay, jump in the plane and come to Rome. I'm going to wait for you there. When I get to Rome, three people from the Italian-Cuban embassy, they were waiting for me in the airport. But, thanks God, the stewardess came to me and said, Mr. Sandoval, stay in your seat. Don't get off the plane.
Wow.
A couple of police officers from Italy get me and put me down. And when I was going downstairs, the official car from the American embassy pulled over and picked me up and drove me straight to the embassy. And those people was waiting for me in the airport.
A close call. If that car from the American embassy hadn't shown up at the bottom of the stairs to the plane, we might not be speaking with Arturo Sandoval today. I wanted to know if he'd ever consider going back to Cuba.
I still have some relatives, to be honest, but all my close family is over here, thanks God. Thanks God. And to be honest, under the circumstance nowadays, how is the whole thing going on? I'm aware of everything was going on there. Believe me, I don't turn my back on that. And I really need to wait until the democracy get established again, thanks God, someday before I die. And respect for human rights and all the minimum of respect for human rights have to reestablish there. And it's such a risk for the people who carry an American passport, like me, to go there, because you never know what they could do to you. It's unpredictable, and I don't want to take that risk, to be honest. No, there's no reason.
Arturo Sandoval, it's been really great speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.
And that's Arturo Sandoval leading his own band through his composition, Sanduga. It takes us out today from the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH here in Boston. I'm Marco Werman. We're back with you tomorrow.
Public Radio International.